Time now to talk sport with Brian Waddle. Good evening, Brian.
Hi, Karen.
How are you doing?
Not too bad. Interesting to hear some of those stories, because I can reveal a little known fact about the Erebus incident.
Yes.
Do you know who the announcer was on the ZB network that night of the Erebus disaster?
I don't, the only person I sort of know was around at that time was Merv Smith, but he was in the day, wasn't he? Daytime.
Yeah, he was in the day.
Yeah.
Well, it's a fella about my size. I was in the studio that night.
It was you.
Because they didn't have,
right.
Yeah, they didn't have overnight radio, and there was a rugby game being played in Italy between the All Blacks and Italy. John Howson was commentating there at the time, and I was asked to go in and man the station. But of course, at that stage, that was long before there had been any issue. And Keith Richardson, a name you probably remember, was the newsreader.
I do, yes.
And he and I were sharing the bill that night, and I actually received the teleprinted text message that confirmed the crash and that the plane would not be coming back. And that was at about 7 or 8 minutes past one in the morning. And it brings back vivid memories because, of course, every 12 months, this is something that is mentioned on all radio stations and is remembered by many people. And so I have vivid memories of that night in particular because we were there all night dealing with the news. So just a little known fact I'd share with you. See, you just don't realise you're going to get that.
No, what happened after that, Brian? You went through the night and did the newsroom all, you know, did that start activating everybody come in and did you do
well,
it?
Well, people started coming in.
Yes.
There was very little news around, of course. I mean, we didn't know about it even about this time. It was only as I was heading into the Broadcasting House studio that I found out about it, and there was a producer standing at the door with a set of records and saying, you know, here's the script that you will read through the night. Do not play any other songs and don't make any comment. That was the way the evening went on. We had the rugby commentary and then carried on with further news until the breakfast show started. It was a very emotional evening, as you can imagine.
Absolutely.
Because I'm sure it still stirs emotions. And a lot of people.
That's Broadcasting House in Durham Lane.
No, that's in Wellington.
You were in Wellington,
The network came from Wellington in those days.
Yes.
And that's how it ran. National Radio, of course, had an overnight program, and there would have been somebody reading the news on that station as well. But the ZB network didn't. That only when there were special events on back in 1979. And that was how I came to be in the studio, of course, being part of the news coverage of it.
And would you believe 43 years ago?
Yeah, I would believe that. Yeah,
would you?
I was in my late teens in an early broadcasting career.
Gee, same. I was about the same as well. Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for that memory.
That memories. I just thought I'd toss that in there for you.
Yes. So many people are, you know, they're disappointed by it being in the Parnell Rose Gardens, and I don't even know where that decision came from for it to be there. You know, that's probably lost in history as well, but I'm sure that, you know, it was thought through. But I wish it would be over for them.
Yeah, well, I think that those sorts of things will probably carry on for a longer period of time. For some people, but I'm sure that it's important that there is a memorial of some sort.
Yeah, there's one in the Waikamete Cemetery, I believe, and several around the country, you know, little ones. I think even St. Matthew in the City, they've got some stained glass windows that are dedicated to, you know, to honour those who died, memorial windows in Auckland. But that's another story. Well, Brian, let's get on to sport.
Yes, indeed.
And the World... Yep. World Cup, what's going on there?
Well, it's a prolonged event, of course. It's going through until December, and it's in the stages now of play and section play, basically. There are a number of four teams, and they all play each other, and two qualify for the playoffs a little later on. The interesting thing is that some of the favoured sides have had early struggles. I mean, Argentina has been beaten. Germany lost its first game. And some of those sides are expected to automatically go through to the next round. I watched one today, a game between Germany and Spain, and it was a very close contest because Spain had already had one win. Germany were in danger of being eliminated early had they not scored an equalising goal. They got it, and there were celebrations there, and they still stand a chance. But you know, some of these sides are being challenged. A lot of people look at it, and it's a bit like rugby. They tend to think that sides like the All Blacks are getting weaker. But the facts of life in international sport these days are that the formerly lesser sides are getting stronger, so therefore the competition is a lot tighter. And I think that's what people are going to see. I don't know if you've watched any games. I know people who tend to watch all if they possibly can, because they're now walking around with their cell phones, mobiles, and watching the video play of the games. I mean, I watch every now and again. Breakfast time is a lovely time to watch a game. 8 o'clock this morning, I watched the game. It was perfect with my Weet-Bix and peaches. Beautiful. Weet-Bix and
canned peaches?
Of course.
hey, so
you can't do it any other way now.
All right. Japan, that to me seems like an upset, if you like. But how come they got so good at football?
Well, they've always been relatively good at the sport, and their first up performance was one that was a bit of a surprise. The sides that they've played since then, of course, are able to see what they're capable of, because sometimes, you know, the filming of these games and the teams basically go through the style of play, etc. And Japan have always been a sharp, quick side, a bit like the Koreans, but they just made a meal of Germany first up, and that was what gave them their opportunity. But Germany, of course, are now in a position where if they win their next game against Costa Rica and Spain beat Japan, then it's that group is sorted out. But interesting that that would be the group. Had New Zealand qualified, that New Zealand would have been in. It was the playoff between New Zealand and Costa Rica that basically saw them into that group, Costa Rica. And, of course, they've already had one win and a loss. So it would have been a tough group for New Zealand had they been at the World Cup with Spain and Germany. So it just gives you an indication as to the sides that are there, because New Zealand actually played pretty well against Costa Rica. They were narrowly beaten and, of course, missed out on the chance to qualify.
I have to ask, because having lived in the UK for so many years, how are the English team doing? Simply because they're so desperate to bring that cup home, aren't they?
Yeah, since 1966. Were you back there in 66 when they won the World Cup?
No, I wasn't there in 66, but certainly every World Cup, you know, they cross their fingers, their legs, their everything in the hopes that it might come
home. Oh, yes, and they write songs about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have songs about it. Well, they won their first game against Iran, but then struggled against the USA. That was a scoreless draw. Unexpected. I think many people would have imagined England would have been too strong for the Americans. And now it's down to a match between England and Wales. Now that, you know, that's like New Zealand playing Australia in a rugby or rugby league test. They're bitter enemies. And England, while they lead the Group B, they're going to need to beat Wales. And you can bet your life that Wales will pull out all the stops to try and upset England. That's just the way they play their game. So, England are there, and I think they will make it, but it's not something I'd put money on.
Oh, no. That's so hard, isn't it? Like you say, England versus Wales. Mind you, better that it's in the general vicinity than it's offshore, I guess. You know, if it's Wales.
Yeah, well, Oh, yeah, it'd be tough if it was being played in either England or in Wales. They'd at least play in Doha, I think, is the capital of Qatar, isn't it?
Sounds like it. I'm not entirely sure. I think it. Don't know. Yeah, it must be Doha. Yeah. So football,
we'll call it that anyway.
Yeah, we'll call it that. Football's coming home. Yeah, they've got another version of that this year as well, in the vain hopes that it might. All right, let's get on to cricket. This is your specialist subject. The Indian cricket side in New Zealand still, and what happened over the weekend or Friday?
Well, Friday they had the win against England, and it was a sensational game of cricket. New Zealand were chasing 307, and it's the kind of performance that you would like to see on a consistent basis from the New Zealand side. They were chasing a big total, and this Indian side is a very, very good side, even though two or three of their regular players have decided to take a rest. They still have a very strong side. And it was basically the batting of Tom Latham that got them through. He had a record-breaking partnership with Kane Williamson, and they were able to win the game, chase down the target with two overs to spare. So it was an outstanding performance by New Zealand. Somewhere along the lines, they tend to lose their consistency of performance in some of these international games, more so the T20s than the ODIs. These are the 50-over games they're playing at the moment, and they are number one ranked side in the world. They're already high on the qualification for next year's World Cup, and they are preparing for that event in India about this time next year. So it's great to be able to play these games. The disappointing fact, of course, is that Sunday's game in Hamilton was washed out, so a good amount of money was lost in terms of turnover at the gate. To some extent, it's a series of games that are a little bit pointless. There's nothing on it, really. They've got a sponsor's trophy, but it's basically come at the end of the World T20, and New Zealand have taken the opportunity to get the Indian side here in New Zealand because they've always been a good showpiece for the game. The Indian community get out and support the event in huge numbers, and it's good for New Zealand cricket to be able to have the Indians here and to have their fans, and also the television rights, which are taken by the Indians, and they pay substantially for those. So, it's the good part of this match before New Zealand prepares for the summer season proper.
I got a text here for you, Brian. No, we didn't play well against Costa Rica, apart from some cheating on behalf of the referee. We cannot play soccer. We're a nation of we're a nation of rugby and league players. Soccer isn't our game. If it were, we'd win more games.
Well,
that's from Mel.
Yeah, we went to the last World Cups. I mean, I watched that game and I thought we were a little unlucky. There are probably people who deeper thinkers about the game of football than me, and they would have had a different viewpoint. But you know, that was where New Zealand could have been. But thanks very much, Mel.
Yes, was there some cheating on behalf of the referee? Inverted commas, cheating.
Oh, look, I see that every sport that's played. If it doesn't go New Zealand's way, I think that the refs are cheating. But you know, there is so much on the officials these days, referees and umpires, that the pressure is immense. There is a replay of every angle. They go back and have a look, and rugby is the sport that I see more of the replays on, because they do have a lot more replays in terms of tries scored and dangerous foul play, and you know, there are disagreements every time something like that happens. So the pressure is on the referees and the umpires, but you know, I try not to be too cynical. I think that everybody is fair and even. Well, that's what I try to tell myself anyway. I might not believe that privately, but publicly I do.
That'll keep your blood pressure down over your Weet-Bix and canned peaches.
Yeah,
with that thought.
Yeah, for the game that's on at 8 o'clock in the morning. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure it'll be a good one.
So, Brian, the Black Sox Men's Softball World Cup in Auckland.
Yeah, and they've had a little bit of frustration with the weather conditions, which has been the problem. I mean, it's been the problem for our cricketers, both men and women, domestically and internationally. And the competition started with a bit of rain. They had a bit of rain in the game against the United States. I've I've not seen a lot of the Black Sox over a period of time. They haven't played a lot of international tournaments. I think the last World Cup was way back in 2017, and they didn't feature as winners or in recent times. I think the world champions now are the Argentine side. And as we speak, the game between the Black Sox and Argentina is in process at the moment in Auckland under lights. And it's a key one for New Zealand to win because they won their first game against the Czech Republic by 3-1. Then they've lost the game against the USA 7-0. The interesting thing about it is one of the names that's been synonymous with Black Sox softball is the manager of the current side, Mark Sorensen. He has been around for many a long year and has played and been a world champion in the sport. Now he's the manager of the side, but I wouldn't look at the Black Sox now as a name or as a team with household names in the days when they were regularly winning the World Series. They seem to have passed by, and now there's a bit of a struggle, and they're challenged by the likes of the United States, Argentina, who they're playing tonight, and also the Canadians are fairly strong. So whether New Zealand can get through to the playoffs, we just have to wait and see, because it's a quick-fire tournament. The final is at the weekend, 7 days, when I think it takes 7 weeks for the World Cup soccer tournament to be completed. So that is a slightly different kind of competition, not so many teams, and the games seemingly aren't as long and exhausting for the players.
How long is a game of softball?
Well, I think they have 8-9 innings, and it can take
as long as it takes.
Two to three, it can be, because depending on whether they have a competition in terms of playoff games or extra time, they're obviously not having it at present. But you know, those are the sorts of things that come into proceedings, so they can be long and tiring. And sleep-inducing if you're not enjoying what's going on.
Brian, we've got a clip of the Black Sox debuting their brand-new haka in their opening match of the Softball World Cup that you mentioned against the Czech Republic on Saturday. So let's have a listen to that. As the Black Sox and their brand new haka on the opening match of the Softball World Cup. And I'm with Brian Waddle. But Brian, do all codes have a haka before a match, New Zealand sports?
Well, it seems that some of those sports do. I don't recall the New Zealand cricket team having done one. I'm not sure whether the football team
whether they do.
No, I don't think they have. But it's often done with a lot of passion, and there's a lot of feeling. Whoever does it, the rugby league team, the Black Ferns, the women's rugby team, had one, didn't they, at the end of their game? And I think even in the early stages of their competition matches,
and it was amazing.
The passion and feeling with which it's done. Oh, yeah. I mean, to watch the All Black haka, it sends a shiver down your spine every time you see it. And it's a challenge that I find enjoyable to watch. It warms you up for the contest, I think. And it gets the, you know, the hackles up and get you involved, get you aggressive.
Yes, and well, in that one, the Sox, Black Sox beat, as you said, they beat the Czech Republic 3-1, so it might have helped at the beginning there. And we, just before, when we were talking about, I call it football because I know the name's changed from soccer, but that texter said soccer isn't our game. Mel said soccer isn't our game. But it is football, isn't it, Brian? The football, we changed the name like way back, didn't we?
Well, it should be. The Americans still call it soccer. I mean, I've done that for years too, and I get told off by football people because I call it soccer, because that was how I, as a young person, was brought up. When we were playing rugby as young kids, soccer was played on another field, and hockey was even played on grass on the next field, and that was where it came. But it is a bit offensive, as I understand it, for people who are passionate football fans. But I think everybody knows what we're talking about one way or the other, because there's so much football around too. Rugby league football, they tend to call their game football as well. But I think when we mention soccer, people know what we're saying. But I bow to those who are passionate fans of the game. And if they want to call it football, that's fine. We just might forget at times.
I think the name football's great. Football is better. I don't like soccer for some reason. Not sure why.
As I understand it, it was brought on by the words association football, and the end of association sort of came from soccer. I'm not sure actually where soccer did arrive from, but you know, I'll agree with you, and we'll call it football. And when I make a mistake, you can just tell me off.
All right, let's go to basketball and the Breakers. How are they getting on? They've had some travel challenges.
Have they ever? And they have had a phenomenal season. They are playing some of the best basketball that I think I can remember. Last year, of course, or the last 2 years, it was dynamite for them. They were based in Australia and they hardly ever came home. Now they're in such good form. I think that they have won 7 out of their last 8 games, 4 of them on the trot. They're playing a congested schedule. They've had, you know, that on Friday, I think it was, they were playing the Taipans in Cairns, and they'd had to come home and be prepared for a game against Brisbane on Sunday, and they won that by 116-79. But they have got a selection of overseas players. The number they're allowed, there's a good sprinkling of experienced New Zealand players in there. They have a new coach this year, and I getting back to watching it, there was a time when I expected them to lose. Well, now I turn on the TV, you're expecting them to win, and they are playing a good, intelligent, aggressive, and well-controlled game of basketball. And, you hear the stories of some of these challenges that they had to arrive home in New Zealand at 3 o'clock one morning for a game, after a game, flying in, and didn't get home until the early hours of the morning. And they were playing again later on that afternoon or evening. I mean, that is tough for professional sportsmen, but they haven't complained. They've just got on and done the business. And you know, there are sportsmen that would complain about those kinds of issues, but they've handled it really well, professionally.
Good on them. And being professionals, I guess they get paid for it.
Oh, they do, yeah. I think they earn a reasonable, probably, more than me. I'm probably not up there with your salary, but, you know.
That. Oh, steady. Radio New Zealand National. Come on. Now, Ian Foster, he's always in the pressure's always on, he's always in the hot seat, but we can take the heat off him for a bit because the coach under fire because England lose to the Springboks at Twickenham.
Yeah, Eddie Jones, and I read somewhere today where somebody said that it was the poorest, most disorganised, dishevelled bunch of England international players that somebody had seen. Now, it's very easy to get away with that if you're anonymous on Twitter or Facebook or any of those. But there was a comment from Stuart Barnes, who writes for one of the England newspapers, who suggested that the best person to take over the England side, because they want to scrap Eddie Jones now, get rid of him, that he's past his use-by date, the best person that they could try is Wayne Smith. Well, you know, the Black Ferns would agree with that. He had a lot to do with their turnaround in the Women's World Cup. But I think that Wayne Smith has already told the world that that was the last game of rugby he will be coaching. He now wants his life back again to go and do the things that he likes doing. I think he's somewhere up in the Bay of Plenty region or around there. And he might not be the man, but it could be Scott Robertson, who the All Blacks don't want. The battle between him and Ian Foster seems to be won by Foster. So Robertson could be flirting with the England rugby team and may see his days in Twickenham soon. But it goes on in every sport. The moment you have a series of losses, and talk about Ian Foster, boy, I mean, every time they lose, you think the world is coming down and Ian Foster has got to go immediately. And then they have two wins and all of a sudden he's back and in control again. And the life that the coaches must lead is probably as demanding as the players.
Yeah, if not more, especially the blood pressure when they're in that box. This is a text.
Oh, I wouldn't want it.
No, this is a text from somebody you will probably recognise their name. Well, I think it is this person. Karen, in the old days, rugby was footy and football was soccer. G. Thorne. Do you think that might be a Graham Thorne?
Oh, now I've heard that name, and yes, I think it may well be Mr. Graham Thorne. Best wishes to him,
yeah. Okay, yes. Well, thank you very much. Great talking to you tonight. We'll catch you again next week.
Pleasure, Karen.
Enjoy your Weet-Bix in the morning.
I will indeed. Watching footy.
Yeah.
Soccer.
Footy.
And it's Portugal versus Uruguay.
Okay, thank you, Brian Waddle.